We mentioned this at the beginning of the programme, some of you texting about it, concerned you are, and indeed we were referring to 10,000 crimes a year are committed by people out on bail. Why is bail so readily given? 30,000 crimes in Northern Ireland linked to suspects on bail. More than 30,000 crimes were linked to people on bail in Northern Ireland over the last 3 years, it's been revealed. And the offences, nearly 30 a day. Some of them are very serious offences. Some of them are the worst offences of all. Murder and rape. Also, people involved in robbery, in witness intimidation, in arson, in rioting, who are out on bail. Let me speak to one of the public representatives who's got a concern about this, Daniel McCrossan from the SDLP. Daniel, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
It does seem like an incredible figure. These people who are obviously under scrutiny of the law, being given bail, and then going on to allegedly commit more crime.
Yeah, it's a hugely shocking revelation and one that will worry quite a lot of people in the general public out there, but people that have already been, I suppose, taken under arrest may not have been exactly charged, but pending the investigation or pending the court case, allowed to live freely within the society, are reoffending in large numbers. 30,000 crimes, as you've rightly said, is a hugely worrying number. 30 a day on average, which is crazy considering what that means, particularly when, as you've rightly pointed out, some of those crimes include murder, which is a number of counts where people have been out on bail, have been, I suppose, associated or questioned in relation to this. 52 attempted murders, 102 rapes, 15 kidnappings, 13 cases of rioting, 175 robberies. This is nothing that should be taken lightly. This is something we need to take very seriously, and in the current political vacuum, it's something that gives me a huge concern as a public representative.
How easy is it to get bail, or what is the process for getting bail? It certainly sounds like as if it's just, you know, wait for 24 hours and you'll get it.
Well, it all comes down to the legal process. I know that many legal representatives do their very best to represent the person in question at that particular time, and they have to take each case in merit. No two cases are the same, and everything comes down to the circumstances that surround that particular investigation. So it's not a straightforward situation. And the law, in my view, does need reviewed in relation to this. When you look at these figures, they are startling. For instance, if you something happened to a very dear loved one of yours, and you'd found out that the person that committed that crime to your loved one or to yourself was actually out on bail, you would start to question the justice system and the failures of it and how flawed that process is. And without a doubt, given the figures that are revealed today in the Belfast Telegraph, it shows very, very clearly that the system is flawed and it is failing people and putting people at very, very dear or a grave risk, and it's something that we all should be very concerned about. And I note that the police constable has also noted his shock in relation to these statistics. But this is something that needs to be tackled. It's not something we need to be talking about. It's something we need to do something about.
Yeah, just wondering, are there some people who aren't fit to be in society and should be basically in custody all the time? Is that what we're arguing? Because they have to be kept somewhere at the expense of the taxpayer.
Well, there needs to be questions asked about the process of this system because, as I've said, it's a very difficult situation. No two cases will ever be the same. No two individuals will be the same. And you can't just have, a blanket approach to all of these situations because they are so individual, so different. But there definitely needs to be review if you look at those figures today and the risk that it poses to the general public. And I know that many people reading this article today and also listening to your programme, Frank, will have grave concerns about this process and the system and whether it is failing. And in my view, it is failing when you look at there's a number of murders that were committed, 52 attempted murders, 102 rapes. You know, it is absolutely startling and something that is really worrying me, and it's certainly something that I and my party will be flagging with the Chief Constable. But, you know, we have to look, is there a failure here on a number of counts? Is there a failure in terms of the PSNI, in terms of the intelligence, or leniency in terms of the judicial system? Maybe we're too lenient. Maybe there's an approach that is costing too much to keep people in prison or in custody. We have to ask these questions, and we have to work out where the system is failing, because what we cannot have under no circumstances is that those individuals that have already been, under scrutiny or going through this process or put under arrest, be released when there's a suspicion or some risk that they may pose further risk to the public. And it is very clear from these figures today that have been released that there is a very serious risk. 30,000 cases linked to people that are out on bail is not a good headline for the PSNI, and it's not a good headline for our justice system. and certainly not for our political system here. We need to be doing something about this, and today I hope that that would start.
It can very easily be argued that there's nothing worse in terms of crime than murder or rape, but the majority of these crimes are actually theft and burglary, and people who would be the victim of, say, a burglary, that can very often be dismissed. Oh, you got your house burgled. Oh, sorry to hear that. And then you move on. People who are the victim, the real victims of burglary, that is life-changing. It's absolutely life-changing to have your house burgled, to be worried, to be concerned, to be violated like that.
Oh, absolutely. And we're only seeing more recently where an elderly woman trying to escape burglars had to jump out through her window and put her life at grave danger as a result of that. That is something that's traumatised not only that particular lady, but also the entire community that surrounds her, and it worries people very, very much that these people are out in this society and are running loose. And this headline today will not help that. It will not instill any confidence in the judicial system or in the PSNI in terms of this, and there needs to be very, very quick action taken to bring about any reassurance to the public that they are dealing with this and taking this very seriously. And you're right, there is a lot of what some may describe as everyday crime in terms of burglaries, but as I said at the start of this interview, no two cases are the same. The circumstances of every case is individual, and every robbery is different in some way. It only takes someone to interrupt a burglar to put that person's life at risk, and that has happened. It's happened in my constituency a lot in the last year, and right across Northern Ireland this is happening, particularly in more rural areas where there's an absence of, I suppose, on-the-beat PSNI activity. And there needs to be a stronger approach in relation to it. But that does not, even though those crimes, I suppose, are what we could describe everyday crimes, it doesn't take away the seriousness of them, as I said, because if you take into consideration the elderly lady that jumped, had to escape through her window because she was so terrified of these burglars, then we're looking at a situation where that woman nearly died, and that makes it a very, very serious situation indeed. And also, when you look, I know that you're saying that there's quite a number of these crimes that aren't murder and attempted murder, but you know, 102 rapes is very serious. There's 102 lives of people that have been destroyed and wrecked, and their families around them and the surroundings. 15 kidnappings, an unbelievable figure given the society we're in today, or should be in today. 13 cases of rioting. 175 robberies is down there, but the murders in particular and the attempted murders is very, very concerning, particularly if these people are out in bail, which does pose huge questions as to whether the people that we're releasing back into the society on bail are fit to be in the society that we live in, because they're certainly posing a risk. And people might think they're not large numbers, but a loss of life, one life alone, is huge, and it cannot be happening particularly from a person that is out on bail.
I don't want to get into a political debate with you because you've none of your rivals here, but it is a reminder of how important a justice minister is, how much we need a government, how we need some hand on the tiller.
Well, the SDLP have never shied away from that argument. We have been very clear from the start that we need devolved government here, that we need it to be functioning. We need ministers that are accountable to the people here to overlook the various departments that they should be responsible for and accountable for. And in their absence, there's a very clear vacuum. And you only have to look at the level of paramilitary activity that's going on in the absence of the Assembly as well. There's huge concerns that exist in the society today, and it's been the vacuum that exists in the Assembly politically isn't helping those matters. We need leadership, we need unity, and we need some form of a strategy to tackle issues such as this, because this is real life, everyday issues that are affecting our people, issues that unite our people right across the various political and religious divides, and it's something that we as politicians are elected to tackle and deal with, and it is not justified, given what is going on in this society and health and education and crime and roads, that we are not in the Assembly dealing with those issues that we're elected to deal with. And I think that every politician, from regardless of which party they are from, will agree with me in that in itself.
Okay. Daniel McCrossan, thank you very much indeed. It must be so annoying for the police to see so many people released on bail. Let me speak to a former police officer, a Norther, and someone who understands what it's like to be in uniform, to be arresting these people, the writer Colin Breen. Colin, good morning.
Good morning.
Colin, so many people getting out on bail. That must be frustrating for the police.
It's always been a running sore for many years in police circles, insofar as, you know, they get whatever evidence they need gathered up. They bring it to court, and the person walks out of the court, you know, that afternoon or in a very short time afterwards. And there's always the risk of reoffending, which is why the police would generally object to bail or absconding. But certainly reoffending would be a big factor, and unfortunately, people do seem to be getting let out. Well, they shouldn't be.
Those people who suffer at the hands of a person out on bail, they must be doubly angry when it comes to the hurt and recovering from the hurt.
Well, you can imagine yourself, Frank. I mean, no one wants to experience crime, but if you're having, say, your home or your mum's home or broken into, there's the violation of the house. There's the feeling that someone's being in there to steal. There's the possibility of violence being, you know, visited upon the person who lives in the house. And then if you find out, well, actually, this person's already been arrested for burglary and we're on bail awaiting sentence, and they've been let out to reoffend. I mean, it would far from cheer you up.
Do you, as a former police officer, see it easier now for people to get out on bail than back in the days when you would have been in the RUC?
It would appear to be easier. I mean, it's very difficult to say. And at the end of the day, you know, the police's job is to bring the evidence to the court, and it's up to the magistrate. But it would appear to be, you know, whether that's a lack of money. Well, obviously, Stormont's not working at the moment, as we've heard. But with the Department of Justice, then can't address the matter. But I'm assuming that they would argue that, well, it's a financial factor as well, in that, you know, it costs so much to keep a person in custody, and they may well be letting them out. But, I mean, it's finding this happy balance between keeping the public safe. And there's also a big factor too, Frank, apart from having a crime committed against you, but there's a terrible thing for you know, people, particularly elderly and vulnerable people, of the fear, living with the fear of crime. And it certainly wouldn't do anything for them to read that headline and then find out, you know, that just accentuate their worries.
And in this day and age, can we not do more to tag these people, as opposed to just some sort of minor step being taken, you know, to properly nail them down where everyone knows where they are day in, day out?
Well, certainly, and again, that would be a matter for the court. You would get no argument, I shouldn't think, out of too many police officers who would be quite happy that if they do have a recurring offender, that if they won't keep them in custody, at least if there's a curfew on them in their home, not that that'll necessarily prevent an offence, but if they're tagged and they do know where they are at any given time, so that if there were to be a burglary and, you know, we're in 101 Blue Street or something, that at least they can tell from the tag if the person was there.
Yeah, that's a good point. Colin, thank you very much. Colin Breen, who's written about his days in the RUC. Daniel McCrossan, thank you as well. Connor is on line 3. Good morning, Connor.
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
Very well, Connor. What's on your mind?
I tell you what it is, Frank. See these wee lads who are on tags, Frank? These tags, Frank, on these wee lads' legs are re-offending themselves whenever they're getting out of jail. And the ones who are escaping on bail, Frank, these ones should be hunted for their attempted murders and everything else. They should be sentenced for life in jail, Frank. Do you know what I mean?
Well, obviously, if you're found guilty and you've, you know, been involved in a murder, we'd like to think that you would serve the proper tariff. But those who haven't yet been found guilty are getting out on bail. Do you have a concern about that?
Frank, they should be put behind bars for life and not letting them out.
Yeah, but, you know, you can't put people behind bars for life immediately the moment they are arrested. You know, we've got to live in the real world. Let me speak to Michael on line 3. Morning, Michael.
Morning, Frank. Hey, Ken. Frank, I was just listening to that last story there. You know, we had an experience a couple of years ago there with a friend of mine get his car stolen. He asked me when I go down to the police station one day that he made a report. We were walking to the police station and the guy who stole a car, now not maybe his car, but a car, was being dragged in by the police. You see, before we filled the report in and got everything, our details, the guy who stole the car was being let out the front door on first name terms. It's pretty serious to watch, Frank, when you know that guy stole somebody else's car.
Yeah, but how sure were you that the guy had actually stolen a car who was being let out the front door on first name terms?
Frank, we've seen him being dragged in and the police was on unknown terms had said to him, you're not driving too much now, and unfortunately they couldn't hold him.
That's amazing. I would have thought that the police, if they arrested you in a stolen car, would take you in, and at least you would be staying in custody for one night.
Frank, it's scary just to watch it. It was scary to watch from our point of view. This could have been the guy that actually stole a friend's car. We don't know which car he stole, but this could have been the guy who stole his car.
Yeah, if you see that, yeah, you begin to lose faith almost in the judicial system.
Well, Frank, we were going through more trouble actually giving the details of where it was stolen. It took us near enough an hour and a half to fill the different forms in. And, you know, to see a guy walking in after doing that's pretty serious.
Yeah, I presume he's released on some form of police bail for that, isn't he?
And I honestly don't know, Frank.
He's going to be...
I'll be honest with you, I'd love to have him digging a gun himself, the same guy, you know, because he's wee Klein.
Yeah, so you felt this was a repeat offender who you had an idea who he was?
He is a repeat offender, Frank. He's pretty widely known in the area that I live.
Yeah, we don't want to say anything more about him.
But don't worry.
Yeah, but, you know, that's really frustrating when you have a well-known who'd been able to do basically what he likes.
Yeah, it's scary. It's scary, Frank. And that was a couple of years ago, so God knows what's going on now.
Well, it's a very negative commentary on how the police deal with someone who's stolen a car, but that is how Michael has seen it. Maybe, just maybe, there's more to it than that. Maybe he was, you know, I don't know, maybe mistaken identity. I don't know, but you do sort of lose the will to have faith in whatever's going on in the legal world if someone is caught in a stolen car and they're back out in society a few hours later. You would expect them to be spending some time in prison, in custody. But then, you know, to live in the real world, there are thousands getting out on bail. Thousands getting out on bail. 10,000. There's 10,000 crimes every year committed by people who are out on bail. You know, I'm not saying that no one should ever get out on bail. I'm sure there are people, I'm absolutely certain, there are people out on bail who will never offend again. But there are far too many who are on bail who are making life a misery for all of us. Now, Tony's got a point. He's on line two. Good morning, Tony.
Morning, Frank.
Yes, Tony.
Frank, quite a few years ago now, I actually was in my car and I was going to a friend's house to drop something off. I got out of the car at the friend's house for just a couple of seconds, left the keys in it, and to my amazement, my car just drove away like mad up the street. Obviously, it had been my fault. I left the keys in it. My wallet was lying on the seat. My mobile phone was on the seat. But what happened, Frank, was I phoned the police because my car had been stolen. The police came. They phoned my mobile phone, and the boys actually said, "Look, we've got your address," which they had because my license was in the car. "We're going to rob your house and beat everybody up." So I was terrified. But anyway, I got home. I got a taxi home. I lived in Ards. I got a taxi home. Everything was all right. We got our locks changed. A while later, my car was recovered. It had had a small accident in a car park. These boys must have just been using it every night. Whenever they hit another car in a car park, they got out and ran. So the car was then recovered. I picked the car up at Creighton's, up the Lisburn Road or whatever. And whenever I picked it up, there was a baseball hat inside the car. Now, the baseball hat wasn't mine, so I got a bag there and I took it to the PSNI. And then a few weeks later, whatever, the PSNI came back to me and said, "Look, we've got a DNA match for this. This guy's well known to us for crime and stuff there." He says, "But we went to arrest him." He says, There's news. He says, "You can take it whatever way you want." And I went, I actually stepped back and went, "What do you mean here? You know, get these boys, lock them up, put them in jail." He says, "Well, when we moved to arrest this guy, he was found hanging by the neck. He had hung himself," which was, I thought to myself, you know, is this good news or, you know what? When I sat back and I thought about it more, I just thought to myself, you know, this is somebody's son. He's been troubled. There's, you know, whereas part of me wanted to beat him up, the other part of me thought, hold on, this is somebody's son. He's just made mistakes here. We'll just have to live and let live and try and get over things and deal with things. It's probably more people need rather than incarceration.
Yeah, you're very understanding, Tony, and of course our sympathy is with any family who loses a son to suicide, regardless of the circumstances or what may have motivated him to take that drastic step. but it doesn't lessen the crime. You had your car stolen. You had threats made against your family. You had to change your locks. And when we look at it like that, we got to keep in mind that there are people the length and breadth of this land who are tortured by individuals who do the likes of that.
Well, that's right, Frank. To be honest, after that, I couldn't even really get into that car again. I got rid of it and bought myself another wee runabout one there. It was painful at the time, but you know what? It probably gave me a lot more learning from it than I thought, really, about thinking about things like that. I'm by no means a Christian, and, you know, sometimes I do think an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but there's other times when things come into bigger perspective. Is it worth so much life? No, it's not.
Yeah, you know, it's a very valid point, Tony. It is absolutely, it's very valid, and it's a very thoughtful thought process that you're going through in relation to that particular individual who is obviously very, very troubled indeed. And as I say, our thoughts are with his family. Tony, thank you.